Well, hello everybody. My name is Nigel Pope, founder and host of the 55 East Revelations podcast, where we discuss economics, money, and investment ideas. I'm a former financial derivatives salesman, stock market investor, and author. And before we get into the conversation, a quick mention to our sponsors and partners. 55EastFX.com, a global money transfer service for corporates, and Qtrade, your broker for FX equities and commodities trading. And back to today. It's my pleasure to have David Lever as my guest. David has more than 27 years in the trading industry, having traded many different financial instruments, and in particular, he's a specialist in the FX markets. His journey has taken him to being part of the successful money management team at Gain Capital, one of the largest FX and CFD retail trading venues in the world, has traded at different banking institutions and well-known proprietary trading houses, where you only get paid if you make money consistently. I'm sure many of our listeners will find this podcast enlightening for their foreign exchange trading journey. So welcome, David.
Thank you, Nigel. Pleasure to be here.
Great. So I'd like to start off by asking you to tell our listeners a bit about how you got started in the financial market space.
For sure. Well, it was the year 1992. I was just out of college. Wasn't so sure what I wanted to do with myself, like many seniors coming out of college. But I had a few friends and family in the business, and they're the ones who actually dragged me in. And it happened to be at a very good time, 1992. Those who may not know, that was the year that George Soros became legend and took on Bank of England and made his billions shorting the British pound, mostly against German Deutschmark, which is no longer in existence. But in a couple of weeks, he made a very large sum of money. And my initial exposure to the markets was one that was relatively fascinating, given that back then the markets were nowhere near as transparent and the volatility was much greater. So it was a very exciting start. Mm. And once I got my foot in the door, I continued on. And here I am 27 years later, still hacking away.
Very good. And in fact, you know, last time you and I spoke, we were having a brief conversation, and you were trading whilst we were talking, which I found fascinating. You know, so
yes,
so clearly you've got to the level where it's almost like riding a bike. You can just do it almost blindfolded.
Correct. Well, that's the goal, and that's by the time we're at the end of the discussion, that's where I'd like to go with this. The idea for me to be successful in trading is undoubtedly to be disciplined. Yeah. So a lot of ways to instill discipline is to just like you do back when you were a young boy in school, and if you stepped out of line, you got your knuckles cracked. Give yourself a set of rules and go from there.
Absolutely. That's That's all right. That's all right.
One of the pitfalls of working from home.
Yeah.
But she's my good luck charm, so. But yes, that's basically the things that you give yourself a set of rules. They aren't important if you don't follow them, but that undoubtedly is the key to trading. Yeah. And you come up with a game plan called a trade idea or a strategy, and then it's up to you to execute that trade plan. Then we can get into a lot more different things as far as risk management and tweaking and things like that that are all important to stay alive in the markets because they're constantly changing.
Yeah. Now, in terms of trading plan, because I come across this an awful lot. You know, I mean, I have my own trading plan as well.
Right.
How did you come across yours? I mean, in particular for the foreign exchange, because I would expect that you'd have a lot of repeatable patterns or strategies. How did you actually formulate yours?
Yeah, well, it started out with technical analysis with the very simple concept of, which I think is real important. And I think the sooner that novice traders and even experienced traders get used to grasping, the more important. And that's finding your exit first on the trade and trying to get your entry as close as you can to the exit, to kind of put the risk reward ratios in your favor. And you have to, you know, remember, keep in mind that a lot of times these levels that are important, they're points of contention. there's always going to be a lot of buyers and a lot of sellers, and then they're all coming together at once. I like to use a lot of analogies when it comes to trading. I like to compare it to a lot of events, whether it's golf or boxing, whether it's driving a car, or whether it's a collision, or whether it's a discussion in court, and then two lawyers going, one person taking this view, you taking the other, and for you to, someone's going to win and somebody's going to lose. So with that in mind, you want to put yourself in a position to win, much as if you would at a casino or some other places. The longer you sit there, the more you expose yourself to randomness, the more likely you are to fail. So the whole idea is you want to be right maybe 2 times out of 5, maybe if you're lucky 6 times out of 10, but even 4.5, 5 times out of 10, you want to be on the winning side of the ledge when all that's done. So what I mean by that is if your scales are smaller and you lose $10 on a trade, you want to try to make $30 on your winners, $10 on your losers. You lose 3 times, you lost $30, and then you made once, you made $30, you break even, you're right 1 time out of 4. So that's what I mean as far as, and you could scale it up to any way you want, but 1,000, 10,000, 100,000. And that's what the experienced money managers do, just that. And that's what I really like to tell a lot of the younger traders. Get your risk reward set up to the point that you're comfortable with. Find your exits. Try to get in as close as you can to those exits. And then at some point, you want to really ultimately run your winner.
Yeah, and are you using technical analysis for that, or what would you be using?
I do. I do now more than ever, Nigel. And it just reaches the point of how the market has changed, especially since from when I began, when it was an open outcry and people couldn't see the market. As the markets have become more electronic, they've changed. Volatility has come in. Now, this 1992 to 2019, coming in, not just in foreign exchange, but in all the asset classes. Hmm. So, yeah, it back in the day, if George Soros thought the Bank of England could in no way hold up the British pound, it was his idea. It was a macro idea. That's what they call these macro theories. That's where they made a lot of their money back in the day. If you thought the NASDAQ was a boom and it was going to have a certain impact on the dollar, and it just started with tech and all that stuff, you make these macro plays to points of the market, have these huge extended moves. They don't happen anymore. So that's the whole point of adjusting. Now, even more so, I mean, if you think about it, pre-crisis, Euro it barely got close to parity. It kind of never goes down. It's just sometimes there's people on the other side of these trades, mostly central banks that have a natural interest of dollars. It's just the lack of leverage in the system after everything that happened in 2008. Volatility and leverage is less. So making macro bets in the market are just that much tougher. How many people have shorted the stock market? No avail, as we said, 28,000 for any reason. So it's not just foreign exchange. Even more so now, the fact that technical analysis is even more important is that high frequency guys have taken over. So you have these really micro movements all day, lots of what seems like inactivity, but one way movements one way for a couple hours, and then the other way a couple hours, then the next day it's the same thing.
Like a cockroach Euros, going up and down.
Yeah, I mean, look at it here. You see Euro in a 110, 112 range for a couple of months. And that to me makes it even more important to find your entries, be very specific with them, and try to jump on the bandwagon as far as where the short-term momentum is going to be. And that's where you really want to enter and execute.
Have you taken him out for a walk?
Yeah, she's been out. She just sees one of her little friends out there, and she's about to go into the bathroom.
Yeah.
Be quiet over there.
Yeah, exactly. Interruptions you can't account for. So basically then you've got your idea, you've got your setup, and then within that you're looking for let's say a 3 times whatever you put down as your bet, your risk. Mm-hmm. You're looking to get, let's say, 3 times that,
It used to be 3 to 1. It depends on the air, it depends on the conditions, good question. But for example, if you were trading the British pound the last not the past couple of weeks, but the last couple of months, it was much more to it than a couple. So you could look for 200 pips on some trades because of all the headlines with regards to Brexit.
Okay.
And, and a lot of times it goes back to what I was saying, how computers have changed the market. Sometimes the algorithms will just rip this stuff. Trades a price, the headline comes out, and it's 100 points lower immediately. So it's really hard to compete with that if you're you're not, don't have your orders out, don't have your levels out ahead in advance. But for something like that, you probably, the volatility tire, you probably want to use a little bit longer, bigger of a stop loss, because you're going to make more on the trade. And then there's things like the trades that we were doing last week when we spoke, where it's euro dollar or even dollar yen or even Aussie dollar, a lot of the G10s. They trade on a trigger point, and you may get 100 points in that direction without being 1 point out of the money. And that's in a slow move. It just happens a lot slower. So I think the thing that's most important for everyone to realize is that a lot of these moves still occur over time.
Yeah.
They just take a lot longer. And a lot of times people sit down and they want to trade and they're all excited and they're gung-ho. Now, the thing that I said about being key to trading is discipline. It's, I'd say 75% of the trades that are happening now out in the market, all asset class, not much. So it's one of those things, if you can't beat them, join them. It's impossible for us to actually become a robot, at least now. Who knows what's going to be 20 years from now.
Yeah,
but at
exactly.
this point, you know, humans cannot be robots. But you want to try to be as robotic as possible. What I mean by that is be very clean with your decisions. Don't be emotional.
Yeah.
I heavily emphasize price points, specific price points, not to overtrade, not to get emotional. And believe it or not, the thing, one of the real keys to my trading success is when you locate your exit and you have to say to yourself, my old boss told me this many, many years ago, like, okay, so when you do your trade and then you're getting cut out, you're okay with it. It's over. You know, you went up to the bar, you talked to the pretty girl and it didn't work out. She walked away, on to the next one.
Good analogy.
You sit there and you don't care, you're not going to find anyone else if you sit there with a frown on your face, at least not anyone that you really want to meet. So with trades, once you're out, it's over and you go on to the next thing. And what I really like to do, I think has been a great help to me, is I write a lot of stuff down. So it's just like, you know, your coaches and your cheat sheets and all the things that you see a lot of the guys in the athletics now with their play callings. It's too much to really process of all the film work and all the study that they do during the week. And then the game's happening and now the price is moving and things start to speed up. So the whole key to the ball game is, to the trading game is, to slow them down and then make your decisions based on what I'd like to say facts that have guessed. That's going to eliminate a lot of the randomness. I hate to guess. So when you find specific price points to enter your trades, it's great. There's no guessing the price traded. I'm expecting it. I'll make a mental image of what I expect to do. There's the whole thing of pattern recognition and all those things that lead into that. But there's a period of time where I expect the pair to trade in a certain direction in a certain manner, where I can be very comfortable with it. I can get to the point where I could perhaps take half the position off, get my stop to break even, and you'd be surprised how much easier trading, how much enjoyable trading becomes when you could just walk away. We could finish our conversation.
Yeah.
I've sold my dolly at 66, now trading at 48. I covered half the position. I leave the balance and stop loss at where I broke, you know, where I got in. And then if it happens to go 20 more points lower, 200, whatever it is, whatever that ends up being, personal preference of what you do with your trades.
Yes.
But that to me is the best way to trade. I think the more you can eliminate the stress and all the financial things that come with putting money on the line, better off.
Totally right. Yeah, I think that's really important, actually, because that because a lot of beginners, myself included, years ago, and it, of course it still hurts, you know, when you lose money, but
always.
But if it hurts too much, then you don't want to come back to the table.
Correct. Right. Very psychological trading is, it always will be, in spite of the roboticness of it. That human element, as long as there's humans involved in it, with everything, lots of different areas, walks of life, you're going to find that. It's just an irreplaceable type thing. It's natural, and there's no reason to, there's only so much you fight it. This, I think we've mentioned before in past discussions, how amazing a trading profile will be to somebody. It, sometimes it matches the personality, just, you know, almost. That part is amazing. So, sometimes, if you're hot tempered and high energy and you need to, you know, maybe get knocked around a little bit to, get the ball rolling, that may suit certain people. That's not me. I like to think things to be very orderly. I like to, like I said, take the of things and like to have them that way. And when they don't, the key for me is cut it out, minimize my loss, and then just go on to the next one. The key to foreign exchange trading, Nigel, is, and it's one of the reasons why I've been doing it for so long and where I continue to like to do it, and when you're going to ask me what my goals are, it's going to be this. It's like you go into the step into the ring every day and give yourself a chance to succeed. Oh, I compare it very much to anyone who plays golf out there. My goal isn't to go out and shoot a 59 one time or hit the hole in one and tell everyone that, hey, I hit a hole in one Pebble Beach. That's great. I did it and now I'm done. I don't care what happens from here. It's going to work. I want to go out on a beautiful day. I want to go out on a rainy day. I want to go out when this feels great. Whatever, I want to be able to give myself a chance to play well every day. So how do you do that?
Like that.
You have process.
Yeah.
So it's process. Whether you develop a swing and you practice it, and you get to the point where there's going to be days when Jack Nicklaus used to say he changed his swing during rounds. This is before it became so, automated and systematic. Not working that day. All right. So you're flexible enough, open-minded enough to do tweaks. So that's also part of growing up as a trader. You have systems that you follow. There's technical analysis that you follow. There's a process that you follow every day. There's steps. Sometimes they don't work, and that's where it becomes really challenging. And that's where you really have to test your mettle and either tweak your system to see that if that's the problem, or is it a market environment problem that's exceptionally slow because it's a holiday or one of those things. Yeah. But you always have to keep in mind, things are really important, continue whatever the trends are and the changes are in the market.
So on that note, let's say then, you've had a series of losses in a row, let's say. Mm-hmm. How do you cope with that? Obviously, you've got your system, and mentally, you want to go out and play well, give yourself a chance to succeed. Where do you draw the line? Let's say you have, I don't know how many it would be, let's say 5 or 6, maybe more losers in a row.
Right.
And that hurts. That hurts. And
leaves a mark. Yes.
What do you do to change the do you ever change your system, or do you reduce your size that you're trading in? What do you do to sort of cope with and
alleviate? Yeah, there's a bunch of things, and the good thing about that is it happens to everyone, without a doubt. That's the biggest, the best, and I recorded. So the one thing that you really do is like I said, keep trying to keep your losses smaller than your gains. Like, no matter where we go with this, running winners, cutting losers is undoubtedly the most important thing anyone needs to take away from this. And it gets into repetition, practice, all the things that you do in a lot of different areas where you're competing to get to the point where you're comfortable with, where you think you have a chance to win. Sure, all right, I conditioned well, I trained well, I'm in good shape, I got a good night's sleep, then I came in and I got crushed. That happens many times, but you want to analyze the losses. Were there any extraneous factors? Was it a news event? Were you short Sterling and there was a headline out? Did you know was there a headline out? It didn't. You should have. Or did you and you just thought you challenged the headline and didn't realize the impact that, no matter what happens, the Brexit's going to happen, so I'll sell Sterling. Those trades don't work so much anymore.
No.
Because all the news algorithms come in at the same time and buy or sell, and before you know it, you limit down. There's all these things where you can analyze what went wrong, why it went wrong. Sometimes, am I looking at an indicator, a technical indicator that used to be really effective that no longer is? Happens all the time.
Right.
It happened to me. I bet the ranch on the 55-day moving average 10, 15 years ago, and breaks of that were good for 2 or 3%. And like I said, you'd rarely be out of the money. Just like everything else, it catches on. So the other key to about really being a good trader is I don't know if counterintuitive is the proper word, but being the minority as compared to being the majority is undoubtedly the key. And at the same time, you want to go with the trend. So that is counterintuitive.
That is
go with the trend, but you want to be the only one. You're going to take that long bus ride from London to Edinburgh. You want to be the only one on the bus, right? One of those things.
Yeah.
The bus is too crowded. It's going to break down on the side of the road. You're going to be sat there, miserable and cold. But for the most part, you make your adjustments. You see, you need, it's great that I look at 3, 4, 5 pairs, not that many. There's one or two that are my go-to pairs. But there's times when Dalian just completely dries up and does nothing for weeks at a time. And then that's the time to, you know, maybe I'll take a look at some of the fast movers, whether it's Dalian or Urien, and go from there. So always analysis, post-game analysis, pre-game analysis, you know, in-game planning. It's all part of the picture.
How many trades a day do you think you do?
Well, now that I've incorporated a short-term algorithm, we enter five pairs on both sides, so that's going to be at least, sometimes both sides. I'd say between 15 to 25 trades a day, which I think is plenty. Yeah, now that I've basically stripped out a lot of the other, I never really want to, you know, click the button and do a trade without it being initiated by a price point trigger. So for the most part, I do sell weakness and I buy strength. I am implementing right now an intraday model, and I try to use between 5 and 10 points up losses on all the entries. You know, the ranges when I got up this morning to check, most of them were 20, 25 points. You know, that's the whole day's range. So if you're using a 5 or 10 point stop loss, it's already over 50% of what to expect for the day. So you have to be really careful about how you're going about this, especially considering that you're lucky if you could be right 40 to 45% of the time. Now, I've been doing this for a very long time, and I happen to have a high win-loss ratio. That's doesn't have anything to do with my seniority in the business. That's just the way I've traded. I've always had, and trust me, even having a win ratio that high, you need to be very careful with how tight your stop losses be.
Yeah.
That's my own. Some people don't believe in stop losses. Some people want to hold stuff forever. I wasn't taught that way.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Did you just, you cut out for a second. Did you actually say your win-loss ratio? Because if you did, I'd like to hear it again, because I didn't hear it.
Yeah, no. It's at one point, it was 75%.
Which is incredible.
When I worked at Galbra.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I was at the top. I was number two in a room full of, I think there were 85 traders. And there was one, this is a funny story. There was one person that was ahead of me at 92%. And I, of course, I asked my boss, I said, well, that's pretty good. He's like, you know, you're really good. You should be doing bigger size. And I said, yeah, it's always easy to say, but, you know, I'll try. I said, that's just out of curiosity. Who's at 92%? And he went, oh, that's the news algo. So to my point, stepping in front of some of these news algos, I highly suggest you do not. And that was a good 5 years ago. They've become even more sophisticated since. So be careful. Do yourself a favor. Make sure you know if it's one of the things of when you get out and you get your start for your day, you do your charts. You know, I do my charts. I start with a longer term view on it with daily charts, 4 hour charts, and I strip it down to, you know, as small as 1 minute. And my go to chart is the 15 minute chart. I love that. That's where I really want to get the butter on the bread. And I also go through the calendar to make sure last night all the RBA policy minutes came out at 7:30 here in the state.
Okay.
For a novel. Yeah. A pretty short spike down. Pretty interesting time in the market. Asia's basically in, but it's a little bit of liquid. And since then, it's rebound. But if you're unaware of some of the things that happen, you know, it's almost like shame on you. So that's why I really heavily emphasize the preparation, the writing of stuff down. It's hard to remember a lot of stuff, especially when stuff speeds up. I know it's a slower market,
true,
but the whole key is to really stay as focused and you know, unemotional is one way of looking at it. But I just think you react and respond much better when you do the work, you know, already done in advance. At that point, you're just clicking them on. That's the way it should be.
Yeah. Do you after a good run, do you sort of take some time off, you know, sort of give yourself a
I do. It's well one done. Of the things that I will struggle with that, have struggled with that philosophy for a very long time, because a lot of times this is great, because I'll pull in yet another sports and I'll do what they do with the American baseball over here. Some guy could be hitting 455 and he's on a roll, and he hit four home runs in the past 6 days, and he's had 15 RBIs and the team's on a roll. And now that guy will come in and they'll do what they call money ball and analyze his statistics. And they'll see that that next game he's going up against a pitcher that he doesn't hit very well. So in spite of what he, what everyone considers, he's on fire, he's on a hot streak, they'll sit that guy down now. Moneyball suggests, I don't care how hot he is, he stinks against this guy, it's not going to carry over. The people that he faced prior, the statistics that he should have done well.
Yeah.
So the same thing holds true with regards to trading. A lot of times, you just get to ride the hot hand. If you're hot, keep going, trade bigger, trade this, do that.
That's right.
And I took the bait for a long time. Then at some point, just think from a physical standpoint, even if you have winners, it could it usually drains you a little bit. So what I try to do is just do the same damn thing every day. And that's what I'm doing now. And we fire off a bunch of trades. They trigger when a certain price hits. Some trades we use 10-point stop loss. Some trades we use a 5. We do it every day. Even if there's a holiday, sometimes we kind of may step back for things for that. But as far as really trying to pick and choose and when to ramp up and do that, I think it's impossible. So I think the closer you can to doing something that's repeatable, the better off you are. And then that's it. You go at some point, you're going to need a mental break, which may coincide with a hot streak or losing streak. But either way, I just think it's important that you develop a strategy that is repeatable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, just to move slightly from the trading environment, we're going to talk about human qualities, because you mentioned three key human qualities that you like to adhere to, and that's honesty, hard work, and treating people as you wish to be treated. Can you elaborate why these are particularly important for you?
Sure. I think it probably all leads into just something, developing something with a little bit of character, a little bit of, mental toughness, but you need to be honest with yourself when you get into the trading world and say to yourself, what am I trying to get out of this? Do I think I'm going to become a millionaire overnight or in a week? Outside of those Bitcoin bulls 5 or 6 years ago, good for them. I'm very happy for them.
Yeah.
It usually doesn't happen that way.
Yeah, very true.
It's hard work. I will undoubtedly 1,000% guarantee every person who's listening at trading, just like everything else, is a grind. So that's that old Woody Allen line of, I think he says 95% of the job is just showing up. So that's the hard work part. You want to be honest with yourself. There aren't any gimmicks. For all those Bitcoin guys who did the gimmicks, they're probably in trouble now. Or foreign exchange guys, whenever a lot of stuff goes on in finance, a lot of stuff goes on with the trading market that can be gimmicky. Yeah. I don't think that that's any way to go. But even if it was, it's going to get out. Someone's going to catch on, and it's not going to be something that is long-lasting. So be honest with yourself. Be honest with others. Work hard. Realize what you get yourself into is going to be a grind. And then the whole thing of just, I've always treated people the way I wanted to be treated makes me feel good. That's just who I am. Not everyone's going to be like me. But it's one of those things when you make people feel good and it makes you feel good, you're going to repeat it. So it's the same thing of it'll eventually get into the point of when you get into trading or when you get into golf or when you get into painting or making music. People love to do things that they're good at, Nigel. So
that's
we
true.
Talked about trading being psychological, being a very key element to the being successful. Make no mistake about it. Things that make you feel good, you're gonna want to repeat, and it's gonna make you feel good, and sooner or later, you may be really good at treating people good. It may get you nowhere, but you'll become an expert in that area. So hard work, honesty, treating people well, I think that's probably a good lesson, not just for at all with trading, but just a lot of different, take that anywhere you want.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably quite simple to answer, but, for normal people, it's, honesty, hard work, treating people. But in the trading environment, we've seen many sort of hedge fund blow-ups, bank blow-ups. Mm-hmm. Why? Because someone, somewhere, has kept it all quiet. They haven't been honest about their losses.
Put off more than they could chew, right? Yep.
Yeah. So it's, I think the trading environment is It'll be brutal on you if you're not honest to yourself.
Right. It's the essence of the biggest, you know, the Madoff scandal. That's really where it all fell down. So, if that's one example of what, you know, there's another thing that I'd really like to emphasize, which I think is also extremely important, is as this stuff goes on and now you set up your pedigree and your style and all this stuff. And believe me, you could be novice and it starts day one, but the key to really making it all work is you repeat winning habits, you eliminate bad ones. Yeah. So when you see something, you apply something, you use the technical analysis, it worked on a trade, trust me, it's going to work again. It's not going to work every time, but it's up to you to figure out your risk-reward ratios, what pairs work, what indicators work, what days of the week. You can get as specific as you want. You can keep yourself up 24 hours, 7 days a week trying to figure all this stuff. I do. I love this. I do put in the work. Yeah. But at the end of the day, there's going to be stuff that doesn't work. And back to when you're on bad streaks and things like that. Well, why on a bench? Well, I keep, you know, using short-term momentum in sterling. And you know what? There aren't any headlines out in the last couple now that the Brexit stuff is quiet down, and I keep losing on it. So you know what? Maybe stop using the short-term momentum in sterling until Brexit stuff. Things like that. That's a good example of making adjustments on the fly. But at the same time, the numbers never lie.
That's so, right.
I highly suggest people figure out individual currency pairs. What do I do well? Why not? It's another great story. Meeting with my boss, he said, "You know, you're doing great. I want you to do better." And he's like, "So here's your numbers. You know, what do you think you're good at?" I said, "Well, I think I'm good at euro yen." He goes, "Okay, you're actually down $2,000 for the month in euro yen," and he goes, "You're up $79,000 trading Aussie." And I didn't know. And I went, wow. And I sat back and I said, "I am." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "You're great at Aussie. Why don't you just trade Aussie more?" I got out of the seat. I went back to the trading desk. I started trading Aussie. I had the best quarter of my career. And I didn't even know it. The numbers don't lie. A lot of times the answer's right in front of you. And sometimes you think something's the case. It really is. So the empirical evidence and things like that, we don't want to get too crazy because a lot of people don't have the access to those types. But on my... You can find out what currency pairs you're making money and losing money in.
Yeah, so you're keeping account of your trades then. You're keeping account of where you do well, where you've lost a bit of money, how your risk reward has gone. So you're keeping a tally of everything. That's very important. That's very important. So that you can look back and see where have I done badly, where have I done well.
Right. You want to make decisions based on facts. That's there's opinion and there's tweaking and there's a lot of that stuff, which, you know, is always, there's always value in something. But for the most part, I like to overly emphasize actual part of it.
So we've talked about the trading plan and, you know, how to do well. You must have some stories or one or two particular stories that...
Yes,
classics
of sometimes it's not all it's cracked up to be. This isn't rocket science. So yeah, there's preparation, there's all the stuff that I do, and but there's other stories of one of the old massive gain capital. You know, we weren't sure what we were doing, where we were going, and all of a sudden we worked in the night shift, and the interest wasn't so high in the beginning. People still day trading stocks. And then slowly but surely, we had an Enron scandal. We had George GW was doing a dollar. We get free press CNBC about currencies. Never really happened. So the market started to pick up, but still, we're still sitting there. Not much is going on. We're working the night shift. Me, the boss, and a young MBA from University of Chicago, all the math degrees you could get and want. He got off his seat. He goes over to refresh our demo, and... at that time, we weren't covering trades in the demo. We were just letting everyone just trade away, let the trades go.
Yeah.
He saw that the demo was up $5 million.
Wow.
And he said it to the boss, and he said, "Hey, you know, this thing's up $5 million. So we're not covering any of the trades. People are just trading away, not utilizing proper risk reward. You know, 90% of retail people going to lose all their money." That's how Gain Capital came up with their strategy to make other sides of trades. And that's another good lesson of a lot of people are going to go out there and not listen to suggestions of, before you get into there, make sure you realize the odds are going to be stacked. You have to pay a spread. Sometimes you have to pay commission. You have to do whatever you can to level that playing. So the stuff that I talked about today, as far as utilizing proper risk reward, that is the most important thing that you take away from this.
Yeah.
And there have 9 winners out of 10, and then that's what happened. They ended up bucketing a lot of those positions. They just are busier, and after really, then they probably still make the ball of their money.
Yeah.
So that's that story with, and that happened all by accident. And then there's another quick one of just Bo Jarvis. So committed to the 55-day moving average back in 2007-8. So one day we're looking at it. Look at this one. And this pair, look at it. It's just, oh my God, look at it. It's with all of the last 6 weeks. And I said, look, this is dust. It was an hourly chart. So it was the 55-hour. It wasn't the 55-day. But we looked at me, my colleague looked at each other. Like, I guess the 55-hour is good as well. So sure enough, as the markets have condensed, the volatility has come down. I do use hourlies around the 55-hour. Yeah, but that's one of the things that came out completely by accident. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of other buried treasures that I find along the way that were completely unintentional. I just say, keep your mind open to anything. Everyone,
absolutely.
You may get the best ideas from the least likely sources.
Yeah, that's a good one, actually. That's definitely one
classic
come across by accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you share with us a time on your journey of an aha moment? You know, what was it, and how did it change you in your trading?
Sure. Actually, working in the UK. Yeah. And being a young guy, thinking I'm a young buck, and going over there, worked for a big American bank, and just really, as we all know, London's the center of the universe, and it's also the most liquid time for FX, and you really get a lot of the serious players are trading heaviest during that time. So my time trading there, I learned a good lesson of, hey, you know what? You may not be as good as you think. Sometimes good butt kicking, that may be the best medicine someone could administer. But it gets to the point where, you think you made it and you have all the answers, and all of a sudden you don't.
Mm.
With regards to many of the things that we talked about earlier, sometimes there's a lot of value in losing, and sometimes there's a lot of value in not taking that step back, taking a deep breath, and saying, "Okay, you know what? In order for me to get to the next step, it all goes back to the things that we spoke about.
Yeah,
I have to work harder. I have to get sharper. I have to realize when's the time. That auto war stuff. When's the time to go in there with two fists, and when the time not step in the ring at all." And those are all the things that really make to eventually give yourself those best chances. If you go into the ring and you're throwing punches like crazy against someone much bigger than you, and you don't even make it to the sixth or seventh round, you've busted yourself, not even landing any punches. So that's going to get you nowhere.
Yeah.
That's what, with trading, a lot of people go in, they trade a lot, they overtrade. It's common, but they never really had goals in mind. They were never really honest with themselves as far as to what they wanted to achieve when they got into this whole thing. So I think those are all the things that are important to figure out objectives, set yourself goals. It doesn't matter. It can be very small to start. You need to develop a process. And at any moment, once you realize that process works, dial it up.
Yeah. Very, very. I mean, I like the art of war. I like the throwing punches, and if you're going to get given a lesson, you need to learn something from it.
For sure.
Yeah,
or else it's, it'll end up being a negative experience. Like,
yeah.
Mike, take negative experiences and learn from them. Try to eliminate, if it's possible. Sometimes it's going to be impossible to eliminate, bad things happening to you. And that's just going to be the thing where, like I said, it's a grind, and you have to be mentally tough and all that stuff. A lot of times it's not by choice.
Yeah.
So, that's why it's important to really try to, if you let all the stuff get to you, stuff outside of the office, and stuff even inside the office, it's usually not going to be something that's going to help. You have to try to think clearly as possible. If I can just sit in the room and do my trades, and I'm comfortable with my system, and I'm, nimble and aggressive and patient, and those are that's the qualities that I possess. Not everyone's going to have those same qualities. If I can sit there and put them to the max every day, I'm going to be good. And in the long run, I'll end up on top just because I'm doing more positive things than I am negative. And like I said, it's not easy, but the more you do it, that's all about the discipline.
Yes.
You'd be surprised. Yeah. You develop a routine and you stick to it. And once you realize it works, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I like it. I like it a lot. Now, I'm going to throw in a little bit of a curveball question here. What's your view on Bitcoin?
Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness. That is, I was very bullish. Well, I have some very close friends who were very high up in that business. And just another quick old story, which is just class. One of them actually managed $1 billion fund for Bitcoin.
Wow.
I said, well, you know, I said, great, but, you know, I don't have a track record in trading Bitcoin. Track rate for foreign exchange, I can tell you, because don't worry about it for that track rate of Bitcoin. Nobody does. So that goes to the point of transparency, open markets, danger, a lot of red flags. But I was very bullish on Bitcoin for not even the blockchain reasons. I'm not technologically savvy enough to know exactly what the benefits are of a blockchain. But yeah, if JP Morgan's got it, that's definitely a good sign. If the central banks are stepping into the ring, that's a good sign. So I think there's price points as well. Whatever the dip was, if it was high 2,000 or 3,000, I think Bitcoin will always be a buy on dips. I think it's hard for it to be a buy on breaks, you know, maybe through a 10 or 11,000, which was that basically pivot that we went around. Looked like we were going to take out 28,000 again just a month and a half ago. It's subject to a lot of headlines. The more people you see getting into that space, the custodialization of it, the central bankalization of it, they're stepped into that space as well. Those are all good signs. So I absolutely think it's something that will eventually break 20,000 in the next, you know, it might be 2 or 3 years, but I definitely think it's a buy on dips. I think anything with four numbers, 1,000 and up, to dip that low, I would think way to play it. And that's it. I think the buying strike is a little bit dangerous just because there's still a lot. I'll just say it's uncertainty or so you know where it's headed. So try to make things yourself a little easier on you and by the weakest.
Yeah, very good. Well, David, that brings us to a close of our discussion, you know, and I'm sure the listeners have a lot to take away from what you've described and shared with us today. So, David,
my pleasure. Lever. My apologies about the cavalier barking as well. I'll never let that happen again.
No. That's all part and parcel of it. Yeah. Listen, thanks very much for joining us and sharing your knowledge and stories. And we hope you'll join us again at some stage in the future.
I will. It was my absolute pleasure, Nigel. Have a great night.
Thanks a lot.